Welcome to the Nexus Podcast. The word Nexus means a connected group. And when it comes to church leadership, we're better together. No one should have to choose between developing themselves and developing their church. The Nexus Podcast by Christ Fellowship is all about having real conversations that equip and resource you to grow and develop the best versions of yourself, your team, and your church. So let's lean in.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Nexus Podcast. I'm your host, James Duvall. A few months ago, Christ Fellowship hosted our annual conference, and I had the honor of speaking with Dr. John Maxwell. He is a number one New York Times best-selling author, coach, and speaker. He's been called the number one leader in business by the American Marketing Association and the world's most influential leadership expert by Inc. magazine. He has been an inspiration to so many of us. Dr. Maxwell also has a real passion for helping Christian leaders grow in the area of personal evangelism. Our conversation was packed with really insightful content that I know will encourage and inspire you. So let's dive in. Well, Dr. Maxwell, we are incredibly honored to have you on the Nexus Podcast. Your voice, experience, and wisdom has been a mentor and coach to so many, including myself and us here at Christ Fellowship. Thank you for taking time to be on the podcast today.
Hey, James. Great to be with you. It's always good to be with you, and it's such a wonderful thing you're doing at Christ Fellowship with the podcast. And so if we can just add value to the listeners, that's what we want to do.
Awesome. So this podcast is all about talking about three main things: developing ourselves, helping leaders develop their teams, and then helping leaders build the church. And so you've been around the church world. You are the voice of leadership. And so I want to start with this idea of one of your last books on self-awareness. And you actually make a statement in that book that if you want to be a better team, have a better organization that produces better results, you need to become better at leading yourself. So can you unpack just some thoughts around this idea of self-awareness and how it impacts us as leaders?
Be glad to, James. I wrote a book several years ago called The 15 Laws of Growth. And one of those laws is the law of awareness that basically says you have to know yourself to grow yourself. Mm-hmm. And from that time on, I've been very committed to helping leaders become much more self-aware. Because first of all, let's just say this, I'm not self-aware. When I run into somebody and say, well, I'm a very self-aware person, I want to say, you're a very delusional person. And the reason I don't think I'm self-aware, I don't think you're self-aware, James, is because we all have blind spots.
Yeah.
And what I've discovered about blind spots is normally we never figure them out ourselves. So we have to have somebody that loves us, cares for us. Sometimes it's a spouse, sometimes it's somebody on the team, who walks into our life and makes us aware of what we're not aware of. I can still remember as a pastor when I had one of my staff members come up to me one day after a staff meeting, and she said to me, John, you don't listen to us. And I was defensive. I said, well, what do you mean I don't listen? Of course, I need to record. Yeah, and then I went home to Margaret and I said, you know, Debbie said today I don't listen to them. And Margaret said, she's right. It's really not a strength of yours, John. Okay. This was a blind spot. So I had to very intentionally change. And I remember, because I was in such a habit of telling people instead of listening, that I would put a big, on my legal pad, whenever I'd be in a meeting with somebody, I'd put about a 3-inch L for listen right at the top. And I would look at that and keep saying, John, shut up. Listen, listen, listen. Well, what I've discovered is that everybody has their blind spots, and you can't grow in an area that you're unaware in.
Yeah.
You don't grow out of a blind spot. You have to have the blind spot revealed to you, and then you can grow. So I am passionate. And so this book, The Self-Aware Leader, has gone crazy. I mean, I write books. I've written a lot of them, 80-some. And honestly, sometimes when I write a book, I don't know how fast it'll take off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some that I thought, oh, this will take off quickly. And then, you know, it stayed on the ground for a while. And then I've had others that I thought, I'm not sure. And it just goes crazy. This one has just gone crazy because it's speaking to the need of many leaders who are basically saying to themselves, I need to become more aware. Now, the whole bottom line on this before we go any further, James, is very simple. You have to be open to having people speak into your life.
Yeah.
And if you're the leader, like the lead pastor or something, you have to tell your staff, you have the right to speak into my life.
Yeah.
Because they won't. And if they don't and they won't, you're never going to be able to uncover those spots. So I tell my team all the time, please, every time you see something that I'm not aware of, please come and help me with it. And they do. And I'm where I am today because a lot of people come to my life and say, John, you really don't do this well. In fact, I have a statement, James, and the statement is, I look at the team like around the table and I say, what's it like to be on the other side of me? And I just love that question. And I'll say, tell me, what is it like? And they tell me. And I just learn from it. It truly makes a difference.
Yeah. I love the idea. And I probably learned it from you that, you know, self-leadership is really about the ruthless elimination of blind spots. Mm-hmm. You know, and
I like that.
Once you find one, you have another one. And one of the practices I've done many times is every year I send out an email to all the people who are close to me and say, help me see what I don't see. And tell me what I need to grow on this year because, you know, being a leader, you have to kind of grow that. One of the books that you've written, and you've written so many, every book is profound, but personally profound to me was your book, No Limits.
Yeah.
And growing your capacity. You actually make the statement that I've went back to many times, says if you develop your abilities and make the right choices, you can reach your capacity. And you actually have an equation about that. But can you talk a little bit about, for leaders, why it's so important to increase capacity and maybe you give several capacity areas to grow in, but maybe some that you think are essential to leaders to grow in.
Yeah, I'll be glad to, James. Well, that book comes out of a conversation. I was having dinner one night with about half a dozen of my friends, and we were just talking about books that had helped us, and we were just having great conversation on books that we had read. And in that conversation, one of my friends said, I always want to increase my capacity, but I've never read a book on it. And I sat back there at that night at dinner and I thought, you're right. I haven't read a book on capacity either. How do you reach it? And you know, as a leader, we're trying to reach our capacity, but we're trying also to have our team reach a capacity. So that got me thinking, and that's what was the catalyst for the No Limit book. So I then began to boil it down. If I'm going to write a book on No Limits, how do we reach capacity? And I came to the conclusion that self-awareness, I have to know myself. And then I have to make the right choices and I have to have gifts. And if I have giftedness, good choices, and I'm aware, then I can reach our capacity. So the first third of the book is on awareness and how do you get awareness, which basically, again, the bottom line is other people come into your life and speak into your life. And then I had a whole section on giftedness and what gifts do you need to reach your capacity and then choices that you make. And it's not like you can eliminate any of them. You can say, well, I'm very aware and I'm very gifted, but I don't make good choices. Well, okay, you're not going to reach your capacity.
Yeah.
It takes all three to make that happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's so interesting. When I wrote that book, I just felt this is going to help a lot of people lift the lid in their life. And it has. It has helped them. But it's a simple formula. Be self-aware, make the right choices, and steward your gifts very well.
Yeah, and I think you do such a great job in the book because you break down multiple different areas of capacity that are important. That you talk about energy, you talk about, you know, different levels.
Emotional capacity, yeah, yeah.
Are there any of those that stand out that if a leader was listening today that maybe not attacking everything, but if there was one kind of linchpin or kind of gateway that would increase, that help in all areas, what would that be?
I think emotional capacity. And I'll tell you how it's come to the forefront with COVID and the adverse situations we've had for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of leaders, honestly, kind of bite the dust because they just didn't have the inward emotional capacity to withstand. It's the story of the house that's built on a rock and the house that's built on a sand. Mm-hmm. You really can't tell the difference between the two houses unless the storm comes. And as soon as the storm comes, you say, oops, that one didn't have a good foundation. And this is what's happened to us now. And I really, if I could help people live out and embrace good values, and if I could help them have emotional strength and capacity, those two things I feel help us weather the storm maybe better than any others. And so I really made an attempt in that book to help people understand how to do that. And when we learn how to do it, it just really makes a difference in our lives.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, there's lessons out of all your books, but one of the things I completely admire about you is just that everything you do really inspires leaders to to have significance.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of a catchphrase or a very popular idea today, to leave a legacy. And people want to do something that's significant, something that's going to outlast them. And I think all your teaching, all your books really help leaders do that. But most people aren't going to, listening to this, aren't going to travel the world or speak to sold-out arenas or write hundreds of books. But what can leaders do specifically day in, day out that's going to be meaningful and leave a legacy in their leadership?
That's such a great question, because I think everybody wants to make their life count. What I always have said about legacy is, if you do it right, when you leave and you're gone, you're not gone. You have physically left the world, but you haven't left the world. What you said, what you thought, what you believed, what you taught, it has a life beyond you. A good legacy has a life beyond a physical death. And so there are two things that I think have to happen for that. One is, it has to add value to people. Mm-hmm. A legacy has no sustainability unless it helps people. So it could, now that can be a lot of things, but you have to ask yourself, is what I'm doing something that will help people live a better life? Mm-hmm. And so, for example, selfish people never leave a legacy. If it's all about me, I don't leave a legacy for anybody. When I die, I mean, let's have the funeral and I'm dead and we carry on. So it has to have that. I think the second thing that's important in legacy is you have to instill it in the lives of others. My last conversation with Jack Welch before he died, we were having a lunch, and he said to me, he said, John, we were talking about General Electric, and when he was the CEO of General Electric, I could probably assess the fact that he was the most respected CEO in the world. What he did with General Electric was amazing. And then when he left General Electric, honestly, it began to fall apart, and now it's just, it's very little of what it was. And he said something to me that day. He said, John, he said, I made a mistake. I put all my time and effort into an organization, and he said, I should have put it in people.
Wow.
And I walked away from him that day, and we were talking about, and the phrase we were discussing that day was, you want to have legs for your legacy. Mm. And I determined, in fact, that was the catalyst for me to start my John Maxwell coaching team.
Okay.
I looked at everything I did and I said, if what I did is going to continue, I got to get people to carry the message. And so, you know, today we have 44,000 coaches in 170 countries, the largest coaching game in the world. But they're the legs, James,
yeah,
to the legacy. And where I'm not, and so they're carrying on this great teachings and these great values. So have a commitment that whatever you do, it adds value to people. And then I think you have to have people that carry that legacy on for you.
That's amazing. Well, talking about people and investing in people, obviously, you know, leadership is really about investing in people and leading people. Sure. And I think in culture today, we're seeing, especially in church world, a lot of turnover, a lack of longevity. And I think the pandemic has even accelerated that. Mm-hmm. And so talking to church leaders today, what are some things that they can do specifically that you've seen, or some thoughts that you would have on how they can create a culture of longevity, especially with younger leaders or teams that they're leading today?
Well, I think that this has been a very difficult time for the church. And to be honest with you, for me as a leadership person, it's been a little disappointed. The phrase I use, James, is I'm a little bit leadership sad. Mm. And the reason I'm leadership sad is because I think we have missed a grand opportunity to make a huge difference in our culture because we've got sucked into the culture. And I think that the church has not been that light. That church hasn't been that salt. It hasn't been different in a beautiful way that would make people say, during adversity, I want to know God. I mean, I look at Christians, I look at non-Christians, and they're both fearful. They're, you know, they've both kind of gone political. And I kind of look at it and say, really? We have a life-changing good news message, and we're not getting it out very, very well. So when we talk about sustainability and that whole process, I believe it begins with the fact that as leaders, we have to understand that the time people count on us the most is the most difficult time. Mm-hmm. In fact, I tell people, during good times, you hardly need leadership. They're just good times.
Yeah.
But during bad times, you need. And so the leader has to understand that he or she, at that moment, has to step up. And what did John Wooden say? When opportunity comes, it's too late to prepare. Mm-hmm. So I feel what has happened to us is, instead of us being beautifully different and incredibly hopeful, we as leaders have let the crowd influence us until we have kind of just gone the way of the crowd. And you know, the crowd's moaning, so we're moaning. And, you know, I tell people, you can't moan and lead at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I think what leaders need to do at this stage of life is they need to go back and reexamine their faith walk. And what I mean by their faith walk is just very simple. Is God God? And if God is God, does he have the ability to take me through these difficult times very successfully? Or am I going to kind of throw up my hands like the world? You know, C.S. Lewis became a Christian because his father put this thought in his head. Did man create God or did God create man?
Yeah.
And after many years of thinking that through, he said, no, God created man. The moment that I realized that and know that God is in control, then my faith has got to rest in him, which is where my strength is. And so, like during COVID, every day I read Psalm 112 every day. Read Psalm 112. I would take a walk and I would read it aloud and I would say, God, this is who you are. And it just strengthened me spiritually. And I just feel that I feel our identity as church leaders, honestly, has been in social media and how many likes I get and what to, and I think, honestly, here's what I know. The more values I have on the inside, the less validation I need on the outside.
That's so good.
And the opposite's true. If I have no values, if I have no emotional stability, strength, if I don't have a core on the inside, then, yeah, I'm a sucker. I fall for all that stuff out there. And pretty soon, you can't tell me from the crowd. And that's what's happening. You know, way back, we're talking about when Idi Amin, this is maybe 35 years ago in Uganda with genocide and the terrible destruction of human lives. I loved what the clergy did. The clergy put on collars, even Protestant clergies, they all put on clergy collars and they went out among the crowd that was dying and they were basically saying, come to me, I'll offer you hope. I've got an answer for you. I always admired that.
Yeah.
And I think that in this crisis, we haven't done that.
Yeah.
And I think we have so much been suckered into what do other people think and my identity that I think we've lost our way. Now, I'm not discouraged. I think that we can find our way. If you lost it, you can find it. So, but I don't think we'll find our way until we again ground ourselves in our faith of who God is and who we are, and we're not the same, and begin to live out those leadership values that make a difference. Winston Churchill during the war, every night that London endured a horrible bombing, the first thing he did in the morning is get out of his bunker and go straight to the bombing site, stick a cigar in his mouth, and walk through the ruins and then tell the people in London, we're still alive.
Wow.
We're going to make it. We're going to win this war. We just have to be enduring. That's what they needed. That was what they needed. And I feel that as so many of us as Christian leaders, we've not done that.
Yeah.
And we've missed the opportunity. But now that we know we missed an opportunity and we have awareness in our life, let's go back and fix it.
Yeah. It seems to be that with everything that the pandemic has taken away, that even some leaders are holding on tighter to what they have instead of this abundance mindset, even with teams that God's going to provide. And I think about what Richard Branson said about creating the culture that your team can go anywhere, but they not want to go anywhere. Yeah. Like you prepare them to go anywhere, but it's such a strong culture that they don't want to go anywhere.
You know, that's a great quote by Branson, by the way, and I completely agree. Again, I'm not quite sure how a Christian has a scarcity mindset. This God creator, you know, Paul said, this God that we serve can do exceeding abundantly. More we can ask and more we can think. We can't even dream all the stuff. This is a God of abundance. And somehow we have gotten into becoming people of scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, by the way, when a person has a scarcity mindset and they come and tell me about how there's not much out there and everything is less and depleted, and they look at me, I said, yeah, I think for you that's true. I would agree with you. And if somebody comes with an abundance mindset and they tell me that, when they're done, I say, yeah, I would agree with you. So what people don't understand is the world they live in is not the world they live in. The world they live in is the world they create.
Nice.
If I'm a scarcity person, guess what? Every day I find things that validate my scarcity.
Yeah.
If I'm an abundance person, every day I find something that validates my abundance. So it is truly a choice. But when you think of who God is and how God created us with spiritual gifts and ask it. Hey, a God who asks us to win the world to the kingdom, that's not scarcity. That's ridiculous, unbelievable, unimaginable abundance.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get back to the source of our faith, God, and basically say, I want to be that God creation that magnifies what he did. I mean, what did Jesus say to the disciples? He said, you're going to do even greater works than me. Now,
yeah.
That's amazing. You're going to do greater works than me?
Yeah.
Is that holding the fort and latching the door and turning off the lights and getting in the corner and holding on?
Mm.
Not at all. I think we've lost our message because we haven't stayed in touch with our faith and let that faith feed us. And, you know, what you focus on expands.
Yeah.
So if you focus on scarcity, it expands. If you focus on abundance, it expands. It's a choice.
That's great. So you hit on evangelism there. I know that's a passion area for you. And more than being a teacher on leadership, you're passionate about winning people for Christ.
I am.
And actually, your leadership has become a platform to lead people to Christ. And so I love hearing those stories. For the pastor or leader who's listening today that wants to inspire their congregation, the teams, and the church they lead to evangelism, to be salt and light in their community, what are some things that you would say that would help a leader that's passionate about evangelism to have a hard time inspiring the church to do that?
Well, James, you couldn't have asked me a question I love more, because this is, I'm known for leadership, but you know me well because we're friends. But my heart is evangelism.
Yeah.
In fact, what would it profit a man if he or she leadeth the whole world and they didn't come to a connection with God?
Yeah.
I mean, so you're talking about what my sweet spot is. For pastors, and I have a real dream, and it's right now it's a dream, it's not a reality for sure, but I have a real dream that pastors would again get into the leadership of evangelism. And let me just say this. When a pastor says, I would like my congregation to be hot in sharing faith and people come to the kingdom, the first thing that a pastor has to do is a pastor has to start sharing his or her faith.
Yeah.
Now, and I mean, I'm talking about outside the church, outside church. Yeah. In fact, I wish pastors didn't even pastor churches. I think that's not even biblical. I think that you ought to pastor communities.
That's good.
Really? A church? Isn't that kind of small? Isn't that kind of, don't you get claustrophobia with that kind of a mindset? I think they ought to be pastoring their communities. So what that means for me, I still have this discipline in my life today. But when I was a pastor, I spent 10 hours every week away from the church, developing relationships with lost people. Many of them, especially in San Diego, a large city, didn't even know I was a pastor. And just developing relationships with them, whether we're playing racquetball, whatever connects with them, intentionally sharing my faith.
Yeah.
And I would lead people to Christ, and then I would encourage them to go to church, and I would encourage them to come to my church. I wouldn't even tell them I was the pastor. And they would come and they'd say, oh my gosh, John, you got up and spoke. And I thought, wait, and oh, you know, the whole deal. And in fact, I had one guy I was playing golf with one time. He said, man, if I'd have known that, I would have quit cussing a lot earlier. I said, no, I didn't want you to. Quit cussing isn't going to give you a kingdom mindset or connection with God. You got to know God. Then he'll take care of that stuff. So the point is to pastors is you cannot give what you have not received. And we teach what we know, but we reproduce who we are.
I love that.
And let me tell you something right now. Pastors, you will immediately turn your congregation into an evangelism group of people when you start sharing your faith outside the church and then start telling stories. All you got to do is get up and say, let me tell you what happened this week when I was over here and I shared, da-da-da, like that. And then after you have set and modeled that, by the way, all of my staff, when I was a pastor, all my staff were required to do 5 hours a week of evangelism.
Wow.
I mean, you said, well, I'm the music guy. Well, I don't care about that. That's good. Sing, good. But have you led somebody to Christ this week? Are you developing a relationship with somebody that you could lead to Christ? And so then you begin to teach it in your congregation and you begin to equip your people how to share their faith. And what happens is this. We, as a church, we become quite isolated, which means we're totally ineffective and we're not salt and we're not light. And we have to integrate again. It's not how much can I pull away from the world. It's how much can... You know, Jesus in John 17 said he prayed for us to be in the world. He said, I don't want them to be of the world, but I want them to be in the world. And so we have to get back in the world. And so we have to lead it by example and then develop a very simple outreach program. You know, we have a phenomenal Salt and Light roundtable for 5 weeks where you literally talk about 4 weeks, you talk about success. And then the last week on a video, I share the four pictures of God. Yeah. And we see, hang on, hundreds of thousands of people come to Christ. Not 100 or tens of hundreds of thousands. I looked at my salvation scoreboard in my office this morning before I left, and we've led 367,232 people to Christ. But it's through these small groups where a lay person leads the discussion, and for 4 weeks you talk about success, which everybody wants to hear in the secular world, and then you change it to faith. So anyway, I don't want to get so much into that, but it'll never happen if the pastor is not sharing his or her faith to other people outside of the church. It's just never going to happen. So the pastor has to model it.
I think that's the first I've ever heard you say that you had a salvation scoreboard.
Oh, I do.
That's amazing.
Oh, James, you have to come by and see it. It literally, around the world, it's connected, wired, and around the world, every time somebody receives Christ, which is right now, I think it's every 11 minutes somebody receives Christ.
Wow.
Our goal is, I said, there will be a day within 5 years that every 15 seconds somebody receives.
Come on.
And I don't know, how would you explain it? Like maybe an airport or a railroad station where the numbers start clicking down. You know what I'm saying? And it clicks down. So I'm working in my office. I hear it clicking. I go turn around. Oh, my gosh. Five more people. Yeah, you know.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I need to come see that.
Yeah, you got to see it. Well, when I take people in my office, I say, I mean, they see all kind of stuff. It's almost like a museum. And when I take them around, let them see everything, and they can ask questions about it. When it's all done, I said, now let me explain something to you. You see that? That's the Salvation Scoreboard. It's the only thing in my office that matters to God.
Come on.
There's nothing else there's not one other. Heaven doesn't rejoice when another book is written. Yeah. Heaven doesn't rejoice when I get another award or recognition. There's no rejoicing in all that. In fact, when it's all done, to be honest with you, that's wood, hay, and stubble. But that salvation scoreboard, heaven's happy.
That's
and
awesome.
If heaven's happy, I'm happy.
That's awesome. Okay, I have one last question for you.
Okay. Don't make it hard, James.
No, this one's a hard one. One's a hard one.
Here we go.
I've been thinking about how to end our time together. So if suddenly today, every book you've ever written disappeared from the face of the earth,
some should disappear.
Except for one. What's the one book that you would want to remain?
James, I should not have let you ask the last question. Yeah, you know, sometimes you give a guy one too many questions to ask. No, it's a good question. I'm having fun with you. It's very hard.
You've written some good ones.
Mm-hmm. It would be Change Your World.
Okay.
And the reason it would be Change Your World is because in that book, I share it with every person how there's a way that they can make a difference in their culture, and I talk about transformation tables. It's kind of a how-to book. What's interesting, and it's not my latest book, but it came out just about a year ago.
Yeah.
But I've written two books since then. But that book, James, we're hearing more lives being changed because of it than anything I've ever written. So yeah, Change Your World.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. It's a great book.
No.
It's a great book, so.
You ought to ask me about what 10 ought to disappear, because, you know, I look at it right now and I think, oh, crap, really? I mean, couldn't I have done a little bit better on that?
I thought your answer was going to be the next one.
So, yeah. Well,
the one you haven't written yet.
Well, people ask me, what is your favorite book? And I always say my favorite book is the book I'm writing right now. And I always feel that.
Yeah.
But the way you asked the question, if there's one book, I think the most life-changing, I mean, I really want to say Intentional Living. Oh, my gosh. You know, Today Matters. The 15 Laws of Growth.
Well, what you had to do is just compile one big book into all of them into one. And next time somebody asks you, you can say, it's this one.
Yeah, and how many people are going to read?
The Greatest Hits.
Hey, how many people are going to read a 267,000-page book? After, you know, I look at some of the books like, man, I hope I can get through this little sucker. But I love writing. You know, I started writing books, James, because I never intended to write a book. I never wanted to be an author. I loved to read, but that wasn't. But I had a wonderful mentor who had written 5 books. His name was Les Perrin. Mm-hmm. And we were having lunch one day, and I said, Les, why do you write books? And he looked at me and said, I write books to extend my influence way beyond my personal touch. Mm-hmm. And the moment he said that, I leaned into him. I said, I'm going to write books. Mm-hmm. And I still write books for that reason. Everywhere I go, no matter what country, doesn't matter. The books are the John the Baptist. They go before me all the time. So I'm very grateful.
Well, I just want to say thank you that you inspire us, you mentor us, you coach us. Okay. I think the fact that you are constantly growing yourself and setting the pace for us, I know for guys who are a little bit younger like myself, it inspires and challenges me to grow myself and learn and increase my capacity and carry on your legacy that you've invested in so many. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, James. It's been a real honor. And I'm excited about the podcast that they're doing here at CFC. I think it's going to help a lot of pastors and churches. And you just do such good work. Well, this is my church.
That's
and
right.
So I love you and I love what you're doing. So thanks for letting me be on.
Thanks for listening to the Nexus Podcast. For additional resources and show notes from today's episode, check out our website, nexusplatform.com. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, share with a friend, and leave us a comment below. We hope these conversations left you feeling equipped and resourced as you grow and develop the best versions of yourself, your team, and your church.